Hey everyone, welcome to the podcast this week. In today's message, our seminal campus pastor Brian opens up with an illustration of the famous dress on the internet. I'm sure you remember it going viral. Is it black and blue or white and gold? Go ahead and Google it if you need a refresher. It split the room about 50-50 with people seeing it both ways. It clearly highlights the fact that we can look at the same things as others and see them completely differently. There are so many different views and opinions in the world today. The divisiveness is all around us. But instead of arguing with each other, what if there was a different way? In today's message, Brian answers the question, what do you do when your passions become a problem?
Well, good morning, Bridgepoint. How are we doing today? We're good? We're good, man. What a great worship set we had here, man. Welcome you guys joining us online. A special welcome to you. We are in an awesome series, being called out, called towards, and called up. As we've been studying through the book of James, and Tyler and Travis has been bringing us through, talking about kind of what does this look like? What good is our faith? Like, what good is it? And we talked about last week, the heart and the tongue and the producing from deep within. What is your heart saying and how are we using our tongue? And today, oh man, James hits us again. It's gonna be a good one, you guys. I think you're gonna enjoy it. I think it's gonna be something that's gonna be deep hitting for all of us. So before we go too far into it, let's have a little bit of, I wanna get you in the right mindset, the right framework for you to be thinking through. Like, what should you be thinking about today? So I want you to be thinking about quarrels, fights, arguments. Think about the best debate you saw on a social media account where they're just going at it. Like, I want you to be thinking about arguments, thinking about debates, thinking about passions, when the passions become just overflow into arguments. Think on those things. And for me, when I was thinking about those topics, I remember a classic fight with my wife. It was one that I lost, I remember a classic fight with my wife. And I think you guys will remember this one too. So here's how it happened. So I was with my wife. We were, we're just hanging out, getting ready to get ready for bed. It's kind of late in the evening. And something popped up on my social media account. And I was like, this is the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. And this is what it was. You guys remember this? Yeah, you remember it? Okay, so I remember it too. And so this is what happened. It came up in there, and there was like huge debate going on. And they were like, is it black and blue or is it gold and white? So by a raising of a hand online, type it in around the campuses. I wanna see how we're doing here, okay? See if I'm right or wrong. Once and for all, can I win this argument? Okay, so who here sees white and gold? Let's raise our hand, white and gold people. Wow. What about the black and blue? Black and blue. Yeah, it's like raising your hand to Jesus right there. You feel that? Like the difference? It was like, yes, Jesus, I love you. It just felt good. I mean, it just felt good. If white and gold want to switch over sides, you can do that too. It just feels good, just being right. It just, wow, split. Like, what's up with that? Okay, all right, now here's a newer one. Okay, so here's the next one. Okay, so this one is either like this teal and gray or pink and white. So who's my teal and gray people? Who's teal and gray? Teal and gray, okay, all right, I see you. Type it in online, I wanna know where you're at. And who's my pink and white? Who's right? Yeah, it just feels good. Just raise your hand, it just feels like just stretch, it just feels different, doesn't it? It just feels different when you're right. See, look what's happening right now. Everybody's like, what's wrong with you? Like, why can't you see it? See, it's perfect. I was like, how could I create an argument among 1,000 people? This will be a great day today. It's going awesome. But so here's the point. Here's the point. Why am I doing this? Right, here's the point. Okay, everyone in this room, online, across the states, everybody, all the different campuses, all of us are looking at the same image. Okay, we're all looking at the same thing. Like all of us, we're looking at the same image, even from similar perspectives, and we're looking at it and we're coming up with two completely different views. We're looking at the same thing and we are rising it up and going, what is wrong with you? Why is it you can't see what I see, right? I mean, you're looking at it and going, man, is there something, like, are you not even trying? Like look again. Like, are you cross-eyed? Like, what's wrong with you? I didn't know something was wrong with you. Like, do you see how it escalates into arguments, quarrels, and fights? I mean, even though I was right, I still lost. Like, it's... But seriously, it's amazing how much we can look at the same image, the same topic with the same facts, and in the same room, come up with two completely different views and argue about them. Now listen to me carefully. The next one I'm gonna show, do not raise your hand, don't yell out. All right, we don't want you to do that. All right, don't type it on a line. I'm talking to you online. All right, so this one, trigger warning, right? All right, so what about when we see something like this? Right? Okay, so good. Y'all did good today. Good job. So, but really, I mean, you look at this and you go, man, what's wrong with you? Like, why can't you see what I see? Like, aren't you looking at the same thing I'm looking at? Like, don't you feel that? Like, you're just going, man, is nobody else looking at what I'm looking at? Is no one else even trying? Is no one else even considering the fact that there's the facts of this? Like, don't you see what I see? What's wrong with you? Are you not even trying? And you see how fast that can turn to an argument? We're looking at the same screen and yet divided. And the truth is I could put on the screen topic after topic and the same thing would happen. It could be anything about the vaccine, anything about the pandemic, anything about masks. I could do anything about race. I could do anything about, depending on which news channel you watch, I could do the same thing. I could put this up here and in this room, online, around the world, there would be just people going, why aren't you even looking at it? Passionately fighting after it, passionately chasing after something that's just, yeah, that's what happens. But let's have one more fun one. Okay, so come on, 8 o'clock tonight, 8 o'clock tonight, right? All right, so where are we at? All right, so we got the Boston Brady, right? This is the Patriots. Who's like, yeah, the Patriots. Wow. Okay. Listen, Jesus can forgive you too. It is so like, there is hope here. This is a safe place. There is hope found for you here. All right. And then how about Tampa Bay? How about Tampa Bay? Who's that? Yeah. It just feels good to be right sometimes, right? I mean, it just feels good. So here's the question for the day. What do you do when your passions become a problem? What do you do when you're seeing these perspectives and different views and you're walking into it and you're going, I passionately believe this? What do you do when your passions pour over into pain, division, arguments, fights? What do you do when your passions become a problem? What do you do? Well, this is what's beautiful about this, is James, the book of James, so this is the half-brother of Jesus, so if you're new here to Christianity, you're trying to figure things out, so we've been studying the book of James, and the book of James is a letter that was written to a group of believers that were kind of early on. This was just 40, 50 years after Jesus had died and rose again. This was near that time period, and man, he is writing to this group of believers who are, believe it or not, Christians back then, arguments, quarrels. There was divide and they were trying to figure this out. And so James was trying to say, hey, listen, from the perspective of the half-brother of Jesus, he has a unique perspective. And he's saying, listen, I know you have differencing of views, but there's one we need to look through. There's one lens we need to look through. And we need to do that together. So this is what James said to these folks. He said, all right, what causes quarrels and what causes fights among you? Is it not this, that your passions are at war within you? You desire and you do not have, so you murder. Okay, so murder here, they're not talking about like literally murdering one another. They're talking about murder in view that Jesus talked about, which was simply that, hey, if you have hate in your heart, that is like the sin of murder. And so what they're talking about was saying, listen, when your passions and desires overflow here to the point that you start hating the other person that you're talking to, all right, when you start reaching that level, that is like a sin of murder. He continues. See, you covet and you cannot obtain. So you fight and you quarrel. You do not have because you do not ask. You ask and you do not receive because you ask wrongly to spend it on your passions. Again, just driven by these passions, these worldly passions. He goes on, you adulterous people. And what does he mean, adulterous people? He's saying, listen, you claim as Christians that I am your Lord, I am your Savior, I am your King, okay? You're claiming that on this side. And then when we start getting into some of your passions and your desires, suddenly you're basically saying, all right, I'm no longer chasing you, Lord, what you want. I'm going after what I want. It's like having an adulterous relationship. Do you not know that friendship with the world is enmity with God? This word enmity is saying it's like hostility with God. Therefore, whoever wishes to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God. An enemy of God. Okay, called out, right? An enemy of God. I'm just gonna go on a wild limb here and say that everybody here in this room, everybody in this that's tuning in online, our campuses, if you're here today, even if you're just trying to figure things out, does God really exist or not? Even you are going, all right, if he does, I don't wanna be an enemy. Like that, there's one thing I do know, an enemy, I don't wanna do that. Like, I don't wanna be an enemy of God. And so what's James saying here? He said, listen, if you wanna be an enemy of God, let your passions, let your desires of things on this world overtake you. Let it ruin you to where you're causing pain and division. Let it overtake you where arguments and quarrels and fights are happening among you. That is the place in where there is this adulterous, murderous, sinful, you're asking with the wrong motives, you're asking with the wrong passions. That is when you're entering into this dangerous place of enemy territory. And so that's why we're asking this question. What do you do when your passions become a problem? I mean, what do you do? And this is what is just astounding in this regard. I mean, absolutely astounding. Here's the thing. As crazy of a problem as this is in this world, James is talking to those guys, and we're talking about it today. He's saying it could be this crazy simple. I mean, think about this. What do you do when your passions become a problem? The answer? Humility. Humility. Watch this, okay? Watch this. James continues. Okay, based on everything we read before about passions, desires, arguments and quarrels, things that are happening, the divide that's happening among them, all right? You got the wrong desires, got this worldliness that you're chasing after, these passions for these wrong things. Even if they're not wrong things, they're just not God things. And he's going, no. See, therefore it says God opposes the proud. See, when this passion and desire pours over into arrogance and pride, that's what we're talking about. This is where it's pouring over and causing problems. All right, God opposes the proud, but he gives grace to the humble. Submit yourselves, therefore, to God. Okay, what's he saying, submit? He's saying, okay, take a lower position of understanding who God is, what he wants from us, what his passions are, what his desires are. We are going to submit ours. We're going to lay ours down and look up to his. All right, that's submitting yourselves, therefore, to God. You're going to humble yourselves, therefore, you're going to humble yourselves before the Lord, and he will exalt you. Okay, humility. What do we mean by humility? Okay, what are we talking about exactly? When we say the words humble, what are we referring to exactly? Like, what does it mean to be humble? And I want you to be thinking about that phrase as we continue, because I believe that what we're gonna see today is that there's a little bit of a difference between what me and you might think as humble and what James, in view of Jesus, thought humility looked like. And even what we're gonna read here in a second, what Peter, who is also a follower of Jesus, who spent years with Jesus, walking with Jesus, learning from Jesus, seeing Jesus interact, from Peter's perspective, what humility is. Okay, because I think this is a pretty profound statement here, and this is a pretty profound idea of what humility is. This is Peter speaking, and you're gonna find some commonality here. So this is Peter, this is from 1 Peter 5. This is Peter's letter to believers as well. And he's saying, listen, clothe yourselves, all of you, with humility toward one another. For God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Same wording, same phrasing. It's the same thing that was going on with James. They're both talking about something. And come to find out, through some scholars, they are studying this and going, okay, these are both referring back to something pretty special. For them, it is remembering something special about humility. It's for them remembering something that there is something unique about this humility language they're using, and there's something unique about what it's pointing back to. Okay, so before we get there, what's some common things we think of when we think of humility? Here's some common definitions. Right, humility, the having a humble opinion of oneself, okay? That's true here too. It's how do you view yourself? Like being fully aware, like how are you viewing yourself, especially when it comes to arguments, right? Passions, kind of those fights and everything. Like how do you view yourself? And it's this deep sense of one's moral littleness, okay? This is like, I am fully aware that I am a limited person without total view of everything. I'm fully aware that I am not perfect, that I'm sinful, I struggle with things, like being fully aware of my failures before I view something. All right, now I'm living in that and knowing that. So this is part of what humility implies. But Peter and James are actually talking about something even more than that. Okay, and so the way guys nowadays are trying to help us understand what this humility entails actually sometimes gets attributed to C.S. Lewis, but actually Rick Warren in his book, Purpose-Driven Life, says this: humility is not thinking less of yourself, it's thinking of yourself less. Okay, there's this unique tension there of going, hey, listen, it's not just looking at yourself and constantly going, well, I am terrible. I'm a horrible person. It's not necessarily that. What it is it's actually thinking of others even more. It's thinking of others and focusing on others. But here's one even better. This is from my pastor hometown in Louisville, Kentucky. He kind of coined this phrase, which has always impacted me, is this: humility means that nothing and no one is beneath me. Humility means that nothing and no one is beneath me. There is no job, there is no person, there is no thing that is beneath me. All right, I don't look down on anything or anyone. Humility is having this view in which there is nothing and no one that is beneath me. Okay, so with that kind of help and definition, James and Peter were actually looking back at a time and experience. And I'll invite you to do the same. Think about who is the most humble person you've ever met, or maybe the most humble action you've ever seen. You know, what comes to mind for you in your life? What comes to mind for you when you're thinking about, hey, this is the most humble person I've ever met, or most humble experience I've ever seen? That's what Peter and James are doing. They're thinking back to a specific moment with Jesus. This is Jesus taking place. This is the story of Jesus that's taking place back when he was having his last supper with his disciples. So if you're catching up to the Jesus story, basically what it is that Jesus had spent his life here on earth. He'd spent 32 years with his folks. He last 3 years working with the disciples, loving on them, and then a time was coming for him to be crucified. He was gonna be betrayed and then be crucified, and he had this one last dinner with his believers, with his brothers that he'd been living with, his friends, these guys that were followers of him, learning from him, students of him. And so they had this special night before this all took place. And this is where we're picking up in this story of John. And Jesus here, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, make sure you catch that. It's important for what we're gonna talk about here in a minute. That Jesus was given all things into his hands, and that he had come from God and was going back to God. Okay, so Jesus is highlighting here that, hey, listen, this is God in the flesh. This is Jesus saying that he knows all these things that were in his hands from God the Father. So what do you do with that? He rose from supper. He laid aside his outer garments and, taking a towel, tied it around his waist. Then he poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel that was wrapped around him. Now you might be going, if you're new to Christianity, you'd be like, why is this like humble? Like what is, be honest, it's kind of weird. Like why is this dude like getting up from supper? Like, okay, so no, like God has all power, authority from God, and then he just rose up from eating and he's like, all right, dude, time to wash some feet. Like, that seems weird. Like if you're walking in that, like if you do it at my house, I'll be like, A little weird, right? But take yourself back to what's going on at that time. So 2,000 years ago, these guys were walking on dirt roads with sandals. And now think about these dirt roads were lined up with camel and donkeys. And so let's just say some donkey dung was happening, all right? I'm just gonna throw that out there, all right? So these guys are walking in that. And so what was the lowest level servant position in that community, in that culture at that time? What was the lowest level position you could possibly have? The lowest level position would be the ones who washed people's feet as they entered into your home. That was the lowest level position. That was love. That was the God of the universe lowering himself down to wash the people's feet, to love them, the disciples' feet. It's pretty powerful. It's what humble looked like. It's what humility looked like. As I was thinking about that story, I started thinking about, the arguments and quarrels like we were talking about, and I started thinking about my wife, and I just love marriage. I think marriage teaches you so much, and I've learned so much because of marriage, and I'll show you one more lesson that I learned the hard way, but we'll do an interactive style, and so we'll see how many of you pass-fail. Just see if it's just me or what. What is this that I have in my hand? Interactive time, you can shout it out. So wait, what do I have in my hand? A towel, I heard hand towel. What we got? We got something that you use to wash things off with, whatever. No, you all are wrong. You're wrong is what you are. This is a decorative artifact, all right? This is only to be viewed and admired from a distance. That's right. Yeah, look at them. They all agree with her. All right, so this is just a decorative artifact. This is to be observed and viewed from a distance. Now listen, I know it's made of cotton, but don't be assuming it's made for water. And don't even think just because it's sitting next to where water is disposed of, where you wash your hands, that it is meant for your nasty hands to be wiped on it. All right, I know it's confusing, but I've learned. This is just a decorative artifact to be observed and viewed from a distance. And even though it's made for water, it ain't made for your water. All right, so like this is special. All right, and so now you know. I didn't know. See, I just didn't know. So even though everything that seems like this was made, I mean, I even read the stuff, like there's like little instructions on the back. It talks about how like you could even wash it and stuff. Like, it don't matter. Decorative artifact. Okay, good. See, that's what I walked into when I got married. I didn't know nothing. Like, this thing got like some diamonds on it. You see that thing shining? Like, I don't even. So, like, I just didn't know. My whole life, I just didn't know. See, what she got into, what she didn't know, is marrying me. See, I'm fancy too. Like I'm fancy like Applebee's on a date night with some Bourbon Street shake and an Oreo shake, some whipped cream on the top. So if you're with me, then you need to watch what you're listening to. Okay, that's what you need to do. All right. If you're like, why is he talking about Applebee's? Then good for you. Right? Good. No, I'm teasing. But no, this is what I had. I mean, this is me. This is just where it's at. So if you, this was like where I'm at, man. So you want to talk about like she was getting with me. It's like, this is what we do in my household. This is what I grew up with. All right. I tried to help her, but so this is what this is. This is what we called a large towel. Then we had medium sized towels, and then we had small towels. And these were made for things that were wet. So if you had a situation where things were wet, you'd go, I need a towel. And we go, sweet, there's a towel right underneath the cabinet. Or there's a towel hanging on the wall right next to the water. You could use it. Like, that's just what we thought it was used for. So for this, it was like, man, and look, these towels that I had in my house that I grew up with, all right, just so we're on the same page, there was nothing you couldn't wipe up with. All right, so we washed our cars. All right, if our toilet overflowed, if you need to dry off your dog, or if you need to dry off your kids after they got out of the, not like one after the other, like we washed it, like we ain't that, but you just use the towel. That's just what you did. All right. But now I've learned. But as I was thinking about it, I was like, here's what's cool. As I was like, all right, so this story with Jesus is like, Jesus hasn't stopped washing feet. He is still washing and loving people. And if Jesus was gonna go and pick up a towel, He picks up us. And so Jesus is still washing feet, but he's calling on us to be the towels. And I started thinking about it. I said, man, in my Christian walk, in your Christian walk, which towel is he grabbing? See, for a lot of us, maybe we haven't realized it, but a lot of us kind of tend to be like this towel, where it's all about being clean and being tightly, even folded correctly, and like you're supposed to look good, and you need to know all the right things to say, and it's all about just making sure you look good. And Jesus is looking for somebody that says, man, this towel, if we're honest, essentially useless. Right? I mean, essentially, it doesn't do anything. But see, this towel, there is nothing that you can't clean this up with. Throw it in the back of your truck and do it again. I think what Jesus is calling us out towards, he's saying, listen, I'm looking for some Christians that say, there isn't a job. There isn't an area to serve. There isn't a person that you'll meet that this person wouldn't be willing to love. I think we're being called out. I think we're being called towards something greater. I think maybe this idea is that we're being called up, and the way we're being called up is actually be called down on our knees. See, as the story continues with Jesus, it's when he had washed their feet and put on his outer garments and resumed his place, he said to them, do you understand what I've done to you? You call me teacher and Lord, and you are right, for so I am. And here's the idea. He's going, listen, you call me teacher as in you want to learn from me. And you call me Lord because you want to be obedient to what I'm asking you to do. And that's right. He continues, if I then, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I have given you an example that you also should do just as I have done to you. Just as I have done to you. I've given you an example. This was Jesus saying, I have given you an example. Now, what's this example Jesus showed us? It's more than just loving and washing some folks' feet. See, what Jesus showed us was there was something special in this story. And it's one of my favorite parts of this passage that's kind of in between the lines. It doesn't show up for a second, but here's what happens. So let's go into the details a little bit of this. So this is Jesus. He shows up and he goes before the disciples. They're all kind of in a circle. And I imagine Jesus being kind of efficient. So he gets down on his knees. Keep in mind, the God of the universe, the sustainer of all things, the one to which Colossians said, all things were made by him and through him and for him. That Jesus was getting on his knees to do the lowest level job by scraping off and wiping down the disciples' feet. So he gets down on his knees and he's dipping in and he's washing feet and he's kind of going around a circle and he's washing feet and lovingly caring for these guys. And then the one to which everything was made for and through him, Jesus, gets to this particular set of feet, this particular pair. And I could just see Jesus getting to this pair and going, I love this guy. See this guy right here? This guy, I loved him when he was in, before he was born. I loved him in his mother's womb. I loved him with his first breath that he took every step of the way on his journey all the way to this moment right here and right now. I loved him every step of the way. And then he's sitting here before me, he's going, okay, this one who I love, I'm going to wash his feet. And the one that he is washing is Judas. This is Judas. And if you're new to the Christian story, Judas is the disciple that Jesus poured into for years, loved, poured into, and treated just like the rest of them. And it was Judas who betrayed Jesus 6 hours from the time he washed his feet to the time that he actually led the Roman guards to get to Jesus to eventually crucify him. See, I'm looking at this and I'm thinking for Jesus to look at Judas and his response is, and he gets to Judas's feet and goes, fully knowing all things, knowing that the Judas was gonna betray him, didn't get to his feet and go, you know what? Nah, this ain't gonna do no good. Get your own stinky feet on out of here. Like that's not what Jesus did, right? Right? And Jesus didn't go, you know what? I'm gonna break his toe so he can't walk out of here. No, Jesus says, I'm gonna love you. I'm going to love you, love you, love you. And I'm gonna wash your feet, knowing that when I do, it will not change your mind. How many times do we choose who we love, who we serve, and how we care for folks based on whether or not we think they'll respond well, change their mind, love you in return? Well, we're being called out of this argument, quarreling world, called towards something greater, being called up, being called down on our knees and goes, listen, even though it's Judas, even though it's somebody that could betray you that he even knew was gonna betray him, even though it was like a brother, betrayed him, still loved him, despite the fact that he was going to betray him. This is what it taught me. It's hard to hate. It's hard to hate when you're humble. It is hard to hate when you're humble. If you have hate in your heart, it's likely a sign that humility isn't present. So maybe this is a practical step for us all today. Here's the practical step. When you get into these scenarios, friends, family, neighbors, coworkers, people online, even them too, maybe you ask yourself this question. Am I proving my point or am I proving my love? Am I proving my point right now? Or am I proving my love? My love for Jesus, for washing my feet when I didn't deserve it? And my love for this person made in the image of God? Am I proving my point? Or am I proving my love? One beautiful passage to close us down today. Mark 10:45. For even the Son of Man, God in the flesh, came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many. What if we left here today as humble servants, following Jesus, by being called out of our argument quarreling world, out of our passions and desires that aren't of God, towards something greater, being called up, by being called down to our needs, and actually loving others, not to prove our point, but to prove our love. Pray with me. Jesus, I want to thank you today, Lord. Despite this being a tough message, God, the fact that we all over Pinellas County right now, around the country who's listening to this message, can acknowledge that you love us. Despite the fact that, Jesus, we didn't deserve it, and how many times that we have turned our back on you and betrayed you, and a lot of times, God, we look at Judas and we're like, man, how could he ever do that to you, Jesus? But how many times have we, in our sin, chosen to move away from you rather than towards you? How many times have we turned our back on you instead of running and chasing after you? And God, how many times have we forgotten your grace, your love that could pour into our life to help us love others? It would help us, God, that we don't try to prove our points and trying to change people's point of view, but our primary goal
our greatest desire of our heart is to prove our love to you, Jesus, and to them. We praise you in Jesus' name. Amen.
Humility means that nothing and no one is beneath me. With that in mind, let's think on the final question Brian left us with. Am I proving my point or proving my love? As a response to this message this week, what if we would ask ourselves that question before we hit post on social media comments and be prepared to erase the ones that fall short? Thanks for listening, everyone. Don't forget to continue to follow along with the daily devotionals on our social media. Have a great week.